Well, we've been talking about it all week, and today here on the Audio Stash, we're presenting a very special guest here on the program. One of Normal's great friends is joining us here today, none other than Tommy Chong. Everyone knows Tommy from his prolific comedy work on film with his sidekick Cheech, as well as his solo stand-up comedy performances happening around the world. A few years ago, Tommy joined the ranks of those who were prosecuted for marijuana-related offenses in this country, and really joined Lenny Bruce as being one of the few artists in America prosecuted by the federal government essentially for their artistic works and messages. The excellent documentary that I recommend to everyone, aka Tommy Chong, followed those events, and Tommy documented his unique prison experience in the book The I Chong, Meditations from the Joint. You can hear our September Audio Stash interview with Tommy about his book in the Audio Stash archive, right up at normalaudiostash.com. After his prison term, Tommy began to delve into a new world for him, activism. He spoke at the 2006 Normal Conference last year and will be involved with the Normal events here in 2007, and he even joined up with Bill Maher, Rick Steves, Willie Nelson, and many other celebrities who advocate marijuana law reform through the Normal Advisory Board. Tommy is truly one of the most straightforward, honest, and sincere individuals you'll ever meet. Dedicated to his family and his work, he seems to have an endless supply of energy, piercing wit, and good nature. It's pretty rare that someone who's achieved his level of celebrity remains as down-to-earth and accessible as Tommy. He continues to tour with shows booked literally worldwide. We caught up with him in Vancouver via telephone earlier this week. Hey, Tommy, it's wonderful to have you back here on Normal's Daily Audio Stash. Thanks again for joining us today.
Well, thank you. It's nice being here.
Hey, many thanks again for joining us here today, Tommy. First, I saw you're going to be speaking at the Normal Aspen Legal Seminar. So what do you think about being out there with all the normal lawyers?
I don't think there's such a thing as a normal lawyer. but if you mean a bunch of pothead lawyers, well, it'll be great, man. You know, I can relate to, you know, potheads of all makes and sizes.
And part of the Aspen Legal Seminars is a visit to the Owl Farm, where Hunter S. Thompson lived and worked. Of course, Hunter, a great friend of Normal throughout his lifetime. You know, I have to ask if you've encountered Hunter's writing.
Oh, yeah, I'm a big fan of his writings, and almost, God, you know, I came so close to meeting with him. I was invited to a party at his place. I think it was a week before he died, before he killed himself.
Wow.
And I didn't go for some reason. I forgot about it or something. But I was always, you know, very big fan of his whole trip, you know.
And now you've got your own top-selling book out there. Meditations from the Joint has been out since last summer, and there has been this huge positive response to it. I know folks have been flocking out to your book signings. You know, what's it been like interacting with people in your audience now that you've shared this, you know, really personal experience with the book?
It's kind of strange, you know. I forget, you know, and what it did, it brought out the literary fan, which is something I'd never had before, and so it's every once in a while, you know, a fan will come to the show or something, and you know, and tell me how much you know they enjoyed the book and the meanings and stuff like that. So it really is a huge ego boost, you know. You know, when you're an entertainer, you reach a level of an audience that. That is normal, you know, as far as, you know, crazies go. But when you write a book, it touches people on such a deep level that it just puts you into a different category. And I love it. I love it.
Do you talk to folks who've been in jail or in prison who are relating to your experience in the book?
Yeah, a whole lot. A whole lot. And in fact, they go now. You know, my wife and I perform, and every once in a while, you know, a guy will come up and say, you know, I was in jail. I did 6 years. I did 10 years. I did 2 years, you know. And I was in Calgary. I'm up in Vancouver now, but I was in Calgary last weekend, and this huge guy, he asked me if I had a 6X T-shirt for him. A 6X. The biggest we had was 3X, and I told him, we only got the 3X, and he says, yeah, hey, I can relate to you, man, you know, and he shook my hand, and his hand was so huge and strong and calloused, you know. So I said, I try to guess people's occupation by their handshake, and I said, oh, are you a plumber? And he said, well, actually, no, I'm a Hell's Angel. Oh, okay.
You gotta wonder, as some of those bikers don't have business cards that say Hell's Angels on there.
Yeah, that's his profession. Yeah, no, I'm Hell's Angel. But he related to me to being in jail and all that stuff, you know.
Wow.
So yeah, it put, you know, that whole jail thing put my whole career in a different perspective. And I've been enjoying it.
Right on. Now, you've joined the Normal Advisory Board and have stepped into this new world of activism. You know, this is something you stayed away from in the past. How is it sort of making this transition?
Yeah, well, you know, I try to stay away from, you know, that part of it, because I always felt that in some perverse way that Cheech and Chong and what we stood for sort of didn't help the movement in any way, you know, because it would, the authorities would always refer to us as, you know, oh, it's just a Cheech and Chong thing, or it's a, we always attacked everything with humor. You know, that's the most powerful force on earth is humor, and so I was trying to stay away from the serious side. But after I did my jail time, and then I realized, you know, how screwed up, you know, the system is. I mean, it's not screwed up until they get you, you know. You know, but when they get you, then all of a sudden, oh, just a minute, that's not right. And so then I became an activist, and also with a plan. You know, I have a plan. I think, and it came out of my show. You know, people. You know, it's been, 40 years since 50 years, you know, that Lenny Bruce said, you know, it's going to be legal because so many lawyers are smoking it. And he said that in the 50s, 56, I think, 55. And, you know, here we are 50, 60 years later, and it's still no closer to being legal. I mean, it's closer in a sense, but, you know, there's still that force that, you know, the pharmaceutical companies and that are opposing it. And so I realized that if we had the whole problem from a medical standpoint, and this is what I've been telling people, and this is what I've been trying to, I'm going to organize a MS, you know, the multiple sclerosis, I'm going to do an offshoot of them. Because it does, you know, pot does help people with MS and people with cancer and stuff like that. And I'm going to start a big campaign based on just the medical thing. And I'm going to ask, you know, all the potheads of the world to go underground with their pot smoking and just, instead of being visible for it, be invisible. You know, be like Republicans, you know, and just show the world, you know, how unfair it is for the police to target people with MS or people with cancer, people with AIDS, you know, and to keep them from getting their medicine. Because if we can show that, you know, it'll be legal in no time.
And Tommy, you travel all around the world, and you've seen the medical access available in California and Oregon, as well as on the west coast of Canada there. Do you see that working for patients?
Absolutely. They're working too good. Because here's what's happening. Pot and marijuana, hemp, whatever you want to call it, has always been in demand. You know, the population of this world, going back to India, going back to 25,000 recorded years, you know, has always used hash, pot, you know, the hemp in their culture as a medicine and as a spiritual guide. You know, it's always been used. It goes way back into China, you know, and it's still listed as an important medicine, In fact, they're finding more things. And so it's always been a medicine, and it's always been around. It's only since the Western civilization where they discount anything Eastern, like the Christians would discount the Eastern methods of worship, like they did, like in the second the Bible, the Second Testament. Where Jesus supposedly knocked the Buddhists for their mindless chanting, and with this Western sort of attitude, they try to include marijuana as a devil's thing, they demonize it, and what's happening with the world, especially with the general population, is the non-religious people, the people that are just trying to get by, they know, the hip people, they know that marijuana is the best substitute for alcohol, say, or for any other recreational drug. So the problem is that these medical places, where they sell medical marijuana, MS patients and cancer patients are just a fraction of their customers, but you've got the rest of the population that take it, instead of cigarettes, or they do it instead of drinking alcohol, or they do it to relieve stress, or they do it. I mean, there's so many reasons why people have to get high, and to have it lumped together, like the DEA and the people are trying to do is pure criminal. And it has to change.
Back 20, 30 years ago, would you have ever dreamed of this system of dispensaries and medical access as it's truly thriving out there today? I mean, did you ever imagine this could happen?
No, not at all. Not at all. Not at all. And the only people that were using it were the indigenous populations.
Yeah.
The Spanish, that's where it ended up. It came from Mexico, And the Pachucos and the Mexicans, that was their cheap, and healthy way to relax and to communicate. Thing is, pot, they really, the society, really, this society, the warmongers, they really are afraid of pot because they know that what happens with potheads is that we become individuals, and we're no longer part of a group, collective, mindless bunch of warmongering idiots that'll go out and kill people just because they're told to.
Tommy, you have some pretty uninhibited political views of America and Canada, but do you think all of this marijuana prohibition is, contributed to the current pretty negative political climate we have today?
Well, you got to look. Society from a historical viewpoint, it comes in waves, you're hip, you're on hip, you're hip, you're on hip, you're in, you're out, you're in, you're out. It's been going on forever, and if you study history, you'll see that there's always been presidents that like Benjamin Franklin, Ben grew pot, and so did George Washington. It wasn't even an issue, and it was a cash crop right up until the 40s. And during the war, everybody was told to grow hemp, for rope and for the war effort. So it's always been there, and it's just a matter of. It's a commerce thing, Like, when you look at why did they take out hemp, Because it was a big industry at one time. Well, plastics, DuPont, with the ropes. Just the rope alone, the rope industry alone. Did you know that the rope industry ruled because all the warships needed hemp? They needed the rope. You couldn't have a ship without rope. And you couldn't have a warship without rope, and so it was a war material, and that's so anything that's a war material, all of a sudden, you know, you're told to grow it. And then when plastics took over, then, well, then let's just get rid of hemp altogether. You know, take it right off the marketplace so there's no competition. And so the plastic peoples, and that's just the petroleum industry and that, you know, and that's what's been causing all our problems today is the petroleum industry. And if you look at the air, you know, the Clean Air Act and all that, you can see how karma works on a big industrial scale as well. Because these guys are getting rich, but eventually they're not going to be able to breathe the air. You know, so it's going to be a bunch of rich people with lung conditions.
So you're saying really that recreational pot smokers should essentially do their best to stay away from the medical dispensaries, really leave that for the patients.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. I'm saying, like I do, you know, I tell people I quit smoking. I'm not going to smoke until the only place I'm going to smoke is where it's legal. You know, where I'm not breaking the law, because I don't like to break laws, because what it does, it puts people in charge. It gives them an excuse to put you in jail, you know. And as breaking laws as a protest to me is not effective. It's more effective if you change the laws legally by voting the right people into office and by making sure that they change the laws to suit the people. We did that with Carter, you know. We got Carter in, and then big business said, oh, you know, get rid of Carter. So with Iran's help, by the way, you know, with the hostages and that, they got Reagan in. And Reagan was Bush heavy. He was like a heavy Bush, you know, instead of Bush light. You got Reagan, which was the first Bush. And so he came in. If you remember, Reagan, you know, you couldn't even have a smoking joint on a boat without having the boat being confiscated. That was during Reagan's era, you know, just say no. And so it comes and goes. You see, we have Clinton. Then Clinton was somewhat of a more liberal. He wasn't as good as Carter. But Carter was too good and too soft, and, you know, like they're trying to do with Hillary now, you know, they're trying to make, you know, what these guys do, they demonize people. But the trouble is, man, you can't hide a good thing, you know. I mean, that's what makes me laugh about pot, you know. You can get pot faster than you get pizza. Practically anywhere in the world, because I ordered both, and the pot always came first.
You know, Tommy, I have to ask, do you think marijuana has become even more a part of American and Canadian cultural fabric today than it was even in the 60s and 70s?
Of course, it's a good idea. You know, like it's like cell phones, you know, like all of a sudden, you know, oh, let's stop the use of cell phones. And they try that. They try it. Oh, we don't want you using your cell phone in your car. You know, I mean, oh, good luck with that one, Jack. You know, that's it. See, this is what happens with bureaucrats. You know, when the people get onto something, the first thing they want to do is regulate it, control it, and you know, put a toll on it, put a tax on it, make sure that you're getting your cut. You know, and that's the trouble with pot. You can't do that with pot. I mean, it's much easier for people to buy it than to grow it. And if it's that much available, and when you think about it, think about it. Why do people smoke it? Why do they smoke it? You know, it's really medical use. You know, recreation is a big, big part of healing. You know, like you work hard all day, you just can't keep working. You got to stop, and you got to relax, and you got to have your recreation period. You know. I mean, even the people in wars and that, you know, they don't leave them in there. They take them out for R&R, rest and relaxation. It's a serious part of our health program. You see, so for the law to say, well, it's recreational, discounting recreation as that somehow isn't a medical use, is a fallacy. It's ridiculous. You see, and what it is, it's just these anti-pot, pro-business, alcoholic, you know, pro-alcohol, pro-tobacco, pro-plastics, pro-oil, all these people, they're afraid of pot, and they don't want pot to be recognized as what it is, and so they've been trying for years, you know, and still, but they're failing. Yeah, they're failing, and they're failing miserably. By the way, we wouldn't have computers if it wasn't for pot. You know, every computer nerd I've ever met has been a big pothead. And this is not only pot but acid too. Let's put mix acid in the mix. You know the guy that discovered the DNA code of the DNA. It's a binary system. You know the double spirals. He discovered that while on acid, and smoking pot. So all these great. You know, there wouldn't be cell phones if it wasn't for pot. There wouldn't be the great literature, the great music. There wouldn't have been the Beatles. The Beatles would not have existed had there not been pot. They would have been still singing, "I Want to Hold Your Hand." You know, instead we got Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds, which is an acronym for LSD. They got all the Sgt. Pepper's. That whole album was a pot. Acid-fueled thing, and probably the best music ever. So you know, for people to keep demonizing it and keep trivializing it, you know, and that's what I'm saying about the approach. We have to do the same approach. We have to throw it back at them, and so instead of protesting, we should rejoice. It should never be a protest. Life should always, whenever you attack something, you give it energy. You know, whenever you go against these DEA or all those idiots, you give them energy. If you do what I did, ignore them. You know, they put me in jail, okay. You know, I could have fought it, and I probably would have won. I probably would have been in court. I would have been, you know, I probably would have won. But what would I have won? I think I won more by showing the world how ridiculous it was to put someone in jail for talking about sending a bong across the state line. The charge was conspiracy to send a bong across the state line. And the trouble is with that theory is that a conspiracy needs more than one person. They just charged me. Where was the rest of my conspirator?
And Tommy, you are based in Canada now. I mean, do you think that Canada is just completely beholden to the U.S. policy on marijuana, or do you think, you know, individuals in policy have a little bit more freedom up there?
Well, you got to be very careful. You got to be very careful because Canada signed a treaty with the United States. And so that if you break any laws, even in Canada, if you break any laws of the United States, the United States has a right to come in and take you out with no hearing, no extradition hearing, nothing. They can just whip you across the border because Canada, you know, oh yeah, Canada's been sucking the titty the United States business all along. That's why we got coalition forces in Iran and Iraq and Afghanistan. It's because of the, you know, big business being the states. See, the states buys everybody. They buy countries. You know, Nepal had a program where hashish was legal and would have the royal stamp on it because that goes back thousands of years. The United States come along and offered them something like $50 million, and all of a sudden, oh, it's illegal again. And the United States buys everybody, and the United States bought Canada. The only difference with Canada is our system, the system here. It's a parliamentary system. And so the prime minister isn't like a George Bush. He just can't, you know, be God or be, you know, the king. You know, here, if the prime minister messes up, they have election. They force an election, and then people can vote his ass right out. And so Canada, and not only that, but there's the separation of the judicial system here. So if you get charged with something, you know, the crown charges you, you know, the state or the crown, or the, you know, as you know, the government charges you with something, they have to go through a judge, and the judge is purely independent. And the judge has told these guys many times, you know, I'm going to dismiss this pot thing until you guys get your act together. You know, you have this is what the judge told them. You guys have studies, and it shows that pot is harmless, doesn't hurt anybody, helps people, and yet you put a law like the United States against it. So you can't have it both ways, guys. It's either one or the other. And if it's illegal, then why is it illegal? And so then all these cases have been thrown out. And there's no law against seeds. There's no law, really. There's law against possession, but it's almost like a United States law, you know. They're just copying the DEA. That's all Canada does. But they can't keep up with it. There's so many head shops springing up all over, and so many caregiving, you know, like the States, you know, for caregivers. So it's changing. It's changing in such a way that it makes me laugh, you know. It really makes me laugh because the cops can't keep up with it, you know. And the cops are involved. You know, the DEA is one of the biggest criminal organizations in the world. And you heard it here on Normal Radio. I'll say it again. The DEA, the Drug Administration, whatever they call it, Drug Administration.
Drug Agency, Enforcement, yeah.
Drug Enforcement Agency are the biggest. They're bigger than the mafia has ever been. They're knee-deep into dealing big quantities. They're involved in flying tons of coke into the States. And I found that out from a guy I was in jail with from Colombia. He personally has seen the airfields. You see, no one searches DEA airplanes when they arrive. Nobody. They're beholden to nobody. So they can come across the border driving anything they want. No one searches them. And so they're the ones that are bringing all this quantity of cocaine and pot and everything else into the country. Hmm. Yeah, just boatloads, plane loads. And they busted a guy up in Canada. There's a big pot, flow of pot from BC and Alberta and that going into the States because the bud is so great. You know, they grow the best bud up here. And so but they goes across the border and the DEA busted people in Los Angeles with millions of dollars, and it's never hit the paper. And what they do, they just send the people back. They don't even charge them.
Huh.
But the reason they don't charge them is because then they would have to account for their money. Remember the days, every once in a while, just before an election, oh, the pot bust in history, and we got all this. And it's all cosmetic. It's all cosmetic. Because and that's why, you know, guys like me go to jail because for selling the bong. It's all cosmetic. It's all for the press.
And you saw America during the Vietnam War era, and now we've got this Iraq conflict. Do you think that all this war and the focus on military violence overseas has been part of the reason it's taken time for this issue of marijuana reform to come around?
Absolutely. And sure, rightly so. I mean, let's stop these wars first. Oh, yeah, the big war. I mean, you know what? Don't be surprised if, well, first of all, two things. Don't be surprised if Michael Moore gets assassinated because he has shown the world exactly what's going on. And when he showed the connection of the Bush family with the Saudis, and it was the Saudi people that caused 9/11, that more or less shoot his victory, you know, just, you know, give us a Patriot Act. You know, you see what's going on. I mean, it's so incomprehensible for people to realize that any one group of people could literally kill thousands of their own people in order to gain power. But when you look at things from the light of day, when you look at and realize that these people belong to a cult that demonizes. You see, it's written in Scripture that it shall be according to your belief. In other words, if you believe in spaceships, for instance, or UFOs, you will see UFOs. You will actually see these UFOs. And the reason is because the mind has a beautiful way of creating scenarios that look real. They're not real, but they look real. Like a man in the desert looking for water, and he looks, and all of a sudden he'll see a lake or a river, and he'll see what they call, it's an hallucination. And that's what happens to people that get involved in religions, you know, cult religions. They hypnotize themselves into seeing these things. And this is what's happening with the Bush administration. You know, it's a cult. If you look at them, study them. You know, there's a whole cult. That's why the Republicans are afraid of them as well as the Democrats, because these guys are a small, in-house little group of people. And that's given us a Patriot Act, that's given us torture, that's given us, you know, the whole thing. And right now, you know, just pray. I mean, we got nothing to fear, because, you know, this evil will always dissipate because it's not real, you see. It takes time, and these things manifest for a while, but then they go away. They disappear from their own lack of substance. There's no substance to Bush's beliefs or to Cheney's beliefs. There's no substance. The Iraqi war, you know, it will go away, just like the Vietnam War did. I was just in Vietnam. I was in Ho Chi Minh City, man. And, oh, my God, what a beautiful, beautiful race of people. The Vietnamese are one of the most gorgeous, beautiful, spiritual people I've ever been around. And to think that, you know, that the powers to be were in there fighting over natural resources is what they've been fighting over. And that's what they're doing in Iraq right now, and that's what they're going to do in Iran eventually, you know. So, but we don't have to worry, man. This will go away like a fart in a dust storm.
Tommy, this has just been a wonderful conversation today, man. Is there a final message you have for all of our Audio Stash listeners seeking reform?
Well, like I say, man, we have to go underground with our organization. We have to, you know, get away from the dreadlock look. We got to get away from, you know, we got to look like everybody else. And we got to act like everybody else. And we got to obey the law. We got to obey. There's no smoking laws everywhere. And we got to obey those laws. We got to make getting high a spiritual sacrament that never should be done in public. There should never be a place, you know, where we can say, you know, just go out there and flaunt the fact that we're breaking the law. As long as a law exists, obey it on the surface. This is what you do in prison, by the way. When you're in prison, you don't break the rules, but you don't obey their version of the rules. You know what I mean? You keep your own, but you don't break their rules. You don't give them an excuse. I tell the people this: don't give anybody an excuse to arrest you. You know, because they're equipped to handle protesters. And that's why, like, they're trying to say, well, there's no one protesting the war this time around. That's because war protesters got smart. It doesn't help to go to jail for 6 years for an idea. You know, no one cares. No one cares. But what they do care is if you do what I'm doing now. Like, I'm in front of thousands of people all the time, and I'm talking my stuff. And I'm showing people by example. This is what I'm saying. Teach by example. You know, when I tell people I don't smoke pot, you know, the people that have ears will understand what I'm saying. You know, I don't need to tell people what I do. It's private. It's a very private issue with me, and it should be with everybody. Now, if you have cancer and you need it, that's a different issue. You know, and if you have MS and you need it, that there again, you know, that can be public. You know, you can go out there, and you should, you know, because there are laws that have been passed that protect people like that. But for the rest of us, man, keep it underground. Keep it underground until it's legal, and then we can celebrate. Okay? Look like those normal lawyers.
Right on, Tommy. This has really been great. I just cannot thank you enough for joining us here today on the Audio Stash, and I'm way looking forward to having you back on the program.
Anytime, man.
legendary comedian and now activist Tommy Chong here on the Audio Stash. He joined us earlier this week via telephone from Canada. We have links to his book, The I Chong, Meditations from the Joint, and to Josh Gilbert's award-winning documentary, a.k.a. Tommy Chong, right up on our website today at normalaudiostash.com. You can also check out the Audio Stash interview from September with Tommy, where we talk specifically about his book. It's all there at normalaudiostash.com.